Hello, everybody. This is your host, Arlen Walker, and this is the Live from Pelham's Wasteland special GM ratings show. And if I have time, I will add a laugh track in here or some shit like that, but probably not. Anyway, today we are going to have a very special episode of rating 10 different game masters who have all signed up for being rated. And by signed up, I mean made the mistake of being friends with me, and therefore I feel like they won't take this too badly when they listen to this episode. As you may well know, Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast has had a series of discussions going on his podcast that relate to some of the procedures in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition, specifically the idea of rating players on how well they fulfilled the particular role that they have taken on for the game and getting benefits or penalties or at least the very least an opportunity cost based on how well they fulfilled that role. And it's generally based on, you know, how well do you behave within the sort of expectations of your class, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, I realized, of course, that this must be because GMs are really, really excited to rate things. And how better to show a great deal of respect to all the GMs in my life than by rating them, because they're so into rating things. Anyway, basically the idea is we're going to rate a whole bunch of GMs on their ability to fulfill their chosen role within a game. The rating system is very simple. We're going to use a classic letter rating format in which the highest rating is an A and the lowest is an F. And there's also a D in between C and F, because I found out that that's still a thing in college when I turned in a paper that I had written basically while half asleep the night before, and the professor handed it back with a D on it. And I thought that people didn't do that anymore, but oh well. Anyway, basically what we're doing is we're going to rate all of these GMs on how well they fulfill the role of GM within their game. Some of them I haven't even played with. How can I rate them effectively if I haven't played in their games, you might ask? Well, the point is that the rating system is basically entirely arbitrary anyway, so it doesn't really matter if I've played in their games or even if I'm at all familiar with how they run their games, because it's basically just a totally arbitrary letter that I, you know, essentially pulled out of a hat because I feel like it fits them sort of thing. Now, who is going to take home the crown? Which of our 10 GMs will be crowned King of the Wasteland? Of course, what they don't know is that the crown is not actually a good thing because it makes them King Pelham, and that doughtiest of knight-errants, Balin Le Savage, is going to come in and stab them with the Holy Lance at some point and thus cause the whole wasteland and all and that sort of stuff. But at the very least, they get to be king for a little while, and that's cool. Now, before we begin, I will add that if any of the GMs that are mentioned in this episode want to appeal their rating for, you know, a potential, you know, shift of grade up or down or anything like that, they're welcome to do so. But I will warn you that if you don't include your favorite piece of poetry in your call-in for appeal, that it probably won't have any effect, and that really the change in grade is going to be based on my decisions about your taste in poetry based on your favorite piece of poetry and not at all about what you say in your own defense with regard to GMing. All right, let's get started. All right, first up on the list is Carl Rodriguez of the GMologist Presents podcast. I have played in a number of games with Carl. We played Twilight 2000 for a while until that didn't fit my schedule as much anymore. I've played a couple sessions of Pathfinder 2. I've played a little bit of a number of things, but the most memorable has been Dungeon Crawl Classics, where my fighter or warrior or whatever the class is called, Ardath, is a super badass who has a giant magical two-handed sword, and he smacks things with it, and he has just a ridiculous number of hit points, like literally twice as many hit points as the next highest character, maybe even more, because I think that I think that Otto has the next highest hit points and he only has like 28, and Ardeth is at like 70 something. So anyway, the point being, I think that Carl Rodriguez is a pretty good GM. He's, you know, able to bring across a lot of the flavor of the game. He really, you know, enjoys letting players come up with inventive ideas and inventive solutions and all of that sort of stuff. But at the same time, Carl Rodriguez is low energy, which is to say that at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, I feel like I'm going to fall asleep in the game. And Carl sometimes seems like he's going to fall asleep too. So we're going to dock points from him for that. In all seriousness, it's super fun to play in Carl's games. And if you get a chance, you definitely should, because I think he's a really excellent game master. And also has, I think, a sort of similar, not necessarily taste in specific games, but a sort of general taste for a lot of variety in games, like me, really likes kind of interesting, weird stuff to bring into his games, really likes trying out new games, all of that sort of stuff. And also, I will add, has the fortitude to run like full adventure paths at times. Like he's run through at least a couple of full Paizo adventure paths. I know he's, I don't remember if he's still in process ever has finished the Enemy Within campaign for Warhammer Fantasy, but like that's pretty impressive, right? Like it's a serious commitment as a GM. Anyway, what's Carl gonna get? We're gonna go over to our panel of judges, which is just me sitting about, you know, 4 feet to my right to talk about what Carl gets. All right, and we're over back to me again. So we've run Carl's games through a pretty complicated simulation, and also, you know, it's a very sophisticated matrix, and there's like dice and lookup charts and all sorts of different things. There's a whole like random table for even like which categories get graded on and things. But the end result of this is that Carl is getting an A in GMing, which is to say that he's really good, but he doesn't know that there's an A+ rating. So keep working at it, Carl. All right. And that is our first GM rated for you guys. Excellent stuff. Next up, we have Jason Hobbs, whose podcast is Random Screed, and also Hobbs and Friends, but that one doesn't get updated nearly as much anymore, which makes me sad. Jason Hobbs is a really excellent game master, too. He really likes to run Westmarch's games, although not always. He's also sometimes willing to run short campaigns that are slated for 6 sessions but turn out to take 12 sessions. But that's, you know, that's okay. That don't we all do that sort of thing? Anyway, the big attraction for playing Jason Hobbs's games is Legendary Kalmata. Legendary Kalmata is this island, or the island is Sindonor, or maybe Kalmata is, I don't even remember, but it's like a Westmarch's hex crawl in a jungle, and you can find treasure and also discover all sorts of weird meta plot bullshit that's going on in the setting that some people on the Discord are really into. And it makes me, you know, very impressed that they put all the pieces together and also that they remember all the things that happen across, you know, 60 or more sessions on YouTube. Anyway, Jason's a really great game master, lots of fun to play with, but he also mostly plays old school games. So we're going to have to dock him some points for that because, as we know, old school games encourage GM fiat in a way that is abusive. In all seriousness, yeah, Hobbs is super, super fun to play with. I really enjoy getting to play with him and is also a really, I feel like I should say this about everybody, but everybody that we're going to talk about is a really excellent friend of mine and someone that I really enjoy getting to hang out with even beyond actually gaming. Totally worth, you know, hanging out and talking to him on an evening on Discord or something like that. And really, Hobbs's game, I think, is a lot of fun. It, to me, captures a lot of the things that are really best about the OSR, the way that he utilizes kind of procedure and random generation content and all of that sort of stuff in order to create this kind of cohesive world where there's all these kind of interesting things going on in it. feels very much like a world that the player characters are a part of rather than a world that they define in a lot of ways, right? It's not like in certain, especially in more modern games where the world kind of has to keep up with the players, right? I think Kalmata does an excellent job of feeling like there is this kind of, you know, this sort of piece of this larger realm that is accessible through this game or something like that. And I think that's really cool. Anyway, but we're getting back to the rating. So let's go over to the judges table. Judges, what do you think? Well, this one was very difficult because as we know, Hobbs is a talented game master, but also we can't just give away top tier ratings for free. So we've decided to give Hobbs an A as a GM. Hobbs also doesn't know that there's an A plus, so keep at it, Hobbs, buddy. You can get better if you try. All right, another GM rated. Let's move on to the next one. And who's this we've got up next? It's Ray Otis, game designer extraordinaire and legendary anchorite. He hosts the Plunderground podcast, and you might ask, how can I even rate Ray Otis's abilities as a GM? I've never played in one of his games, at least as far as I can remember. I sincerely apologize, Ray, if I have. I know I've tried to play in your games a couple times, and scheduling has had issues. Also, he doesn't post like actual plays, so it's not like I can just watch him run a game, to which I will say, does it really matter? The ratings are entirely arbitrary anyway. Anyway, Ray Otis is a super cool guy, very, very intelligent, really knows his stuff, really into like discovering kind of like the nature of the Appendix N, among other things, which we talked a little bit about. And I know he went through and read a bunch of sort of the minor stuff that's on that list and is part of the reason why I went and read it. And I think we both had the same reaction that a ton of it is basically just trash that Gary happened to like and therefore has kind of unfairly survived when other better things didn't survive. Like, the fact that Carl Edward Wagner's books don't get reprints nearly as often as some of the trash that does. Anyway, Ray's also a game designer, and he's designed a number of really cool games. There and Back Again is an attempt to capture the flavor of the first publishing of The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, in that it, you know, has this sort of like weird fairy tale feel and fits less into the kind of like overarching epic fantasy of The Lord of the Rings. But there's a bunch of other stuff, right? Warriors of the Red Planet and a number of games that are sort of based on kind of lasers and feelings on some level, where you have like one attribute and it's, you know, divides your character between like, you know, one sort of style and another sort of style. And so you kind of, you know, the idea being that like, if you're a sword and sorcerer swordsman, you're not a sword and sorcery sorcerer. And so you have to choose which one you want to be, that sort of thing. Anyway, Ray Otis seems really cool, but also he took a long hiatus from podcasting. And you might say, isn't that basically the pot calling the kettle black? To which I would say, I'm not sure what you're talking about. I have really no idea what you could be referring to. But we're going to have to dock him some points for that because it, you know, shows lack of commitment or some bullshit. I don't know. Anyway, let's go to the judges table. Judges, what do we think about Ray Otis as a GM? Well, this is another difficult one, made particularly difficult by, you know, not playing in any of his games ever and therefore not having, you know, primary source experience to go on. But Ray Otis seems like a really good guy, and he talks about doing like roses and thorns after sessions to talk about like the sort of things that people liked and didn't like in games. And I think that's pretty cool. So we're going to give him an A. Another A. Looks like there's a pattern here. I don't know what you're talking about. This is a totally fair and also definitely not completely arbitrary judging system for rating GMs. Ray Otis gets an A. Let's move on to the next game master. All right, who do we have next? It's Joe Richter of the Hindsight List podcast and also the Wheeler Woe Actual Play podcast. Now, you might say that in preparation for rating Joe, I should have, you know, listened to some of Wheeler Woe so I would get a sense of his, like, GMing style and all of that sort of stuff, to which I will say, what, do you think I'm made of time or something? That's ridiculous. Anyway, sorry, Joe, I haven't listened to Wheeler Woe. I will listen to it at some point, but what can I say? I'm a bad friend who doesn't always listen to other people's. I mean, I don't even listen to everybody's regular podcasts anymore because I'm busy and there's so many of them and there's so much good stuff. And I feel like I get, you know, like a small dip into a large pond sort of thing. Anyway, Joe also runs Hindsight List, which is his sort of, you know, discussion podcast where he talks about stuff a little like many of these. Joe's a really cool guy, really fun to hang out with, has a real great sense of humor, and is also, you know, always really, you know, upbeat and, you know, willing to, you know, energize the party, all of that sort of stuff. We've been working together on Cerebrivore, which is a new podcast that the first episode just came out today. So maybe check it out because it's pretty cool. I don't think I'm in that first episode, if I remember correctly, but I'll be in later ones because it's a rotating panel discussing all sorts of things. So, you know, anyway. But the problem is that Joe really likes Pathfinder, especially Pathfinder 1. And as we know, Pathfinder 1 is basically just a video game, not a real RPG. So we're going to have to dock him some points for the fact that he doesn't believe in, you know, having players make real decisions and that sort of stuff. He just wants them to play a video game, clearly, because that's what Pathfinder 1 is. Anyway, aside from that, seems like Joe is pretty cool. He also, like, one of the things I will say in Pathfinder 1's favor is that even though it's a video game, it's a free video game because you can go to the Archives of Nethys website and just look at all the rules because Paizo puts them out for free for some reason, which seems totally unsustainable. But they do it for Starfinder and Pathfinder 2 also, which is crazy, right? Like, anyway, the point being that at least Joe's not forcing people to buy the video game that he likes to run in order to play in his game. They can just use the website and all that sort of stuff. Aside from all of that, anything else we want to say about Joe Richter? Well, we will also add that, you know, he's a really good friend and he seems really cool. And even though I haven't played any of his games, I would really like to because it seems like it would be a lot of fun to play in one of Joe's games because I, you know, I really appreciate his kind of energy and his, you know, commitment to the sort of, like, you know, have fun and just do cool shit in RPGs element, which is something that I think, you know, Pathfinder in particular gets criticized for not having sometimes, that it's all, you know, have to look up the specific rules for this thing. And Joe, I think, kind of brings a nice sort of balancing to that where he's like, yeah, just, you know, we'll just model it this way and kind of move on, sort of much more of kind of a rulings over rules, let's all just, you know, have fun and move on sort of thing, which I think would be really interesting to try out in play. Anyway, let's go to the judges table to see what Joe gets for his rating. Welp, this one was another difficult one, made particularly difficult by, again, not having played in any of Joe's games or having listened to his actual play content. So we're just going to have to give him an A. Looks like Joe gets an A too. It's a four-way tie for first place. Who's going to take the crown? I don't know, but our next GM has a serious chance of blowing the other competitors away. All right, our next contestant is a real heavyweight of the RPG podcasting scene, but he's not on Anchor anymore. We're going to have to dock him some points for abandoning the, you know, system that we all use, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, Che Webster runs the Roleplay Rescue podcast, where he talks about how to get back into roleplaying after, you know, having some time away from the hobby and, you know, maybe like having kids or having adult responsibilities or all the sorts of things that make it difficult for a person to continue to roleplay if they did it once before and then want to get back into it, all of that sort of stuff. He's also a good friend of mine and is you know, going through a whole number of things and all of that sort of stuff, has had a little bit of chaos in his own life, but is you know, a really wonderful person and a you know, a friend that I really respect and care about in a lot of ways, in addition to really liking his podcast and really enjoying the content that he puts out. What can we say about Che Webster as a GM? Well, he, you know, I've played in a couple of things with him and I really enjoyed them. We played some Cypher System stuff together, but he's also apparently a big fan of GURPS. So we're going to have to dock some points for bad taste. Anyway, in all seriousness, Che is a really wonderful friend and a really excellent GM. Really, really enjoy getting to play in his games. Really enjoy having him play in my games. He played in a Savage Worlds kind of short campaign that I ran that was, you know, basically a ripoff of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that was, I thought, super fun. Excuse me. He played a mutated rat who had a spear, who was, you know, very agile and sort of did parkoury stuff and all of that sort of stuff. Carl actually played in that one too, as did Jason Connerly. Yeah, it was a really fun campaign. Anyway, it would definitely be a joy to play in one of Che's games or to have him in one of my games again, because I think it's really, really excellent player and GM in a lot of ways. But let's go to the judges and see how they're going to rank Che Webster. All right, judges, what have you got for me? Well, this is another difficult one because, you know, have played in a number of games with Che. And of course, that makes it difficult to judge how good of a GM they are on the whole, because you have even more, you know, information. You can't be just kind of totally as arbitrary as you might otherwise be, where you're just basing it off of like one session or something like that. But we're going to give, after, you know, intense consideration, we're going to give Che Webster an A also. So yeah, Che, nice job. You tied with everybody else so far, but we'll have to see if you tie with everybody else who is on the show. All right, our sixth contestant is Daniel Norton, who runs the Bandits Keep Media Empire, which is to say that there's an Anchor podcast and also a YouTube channel and also an Actual Play YouTube channel and maybe some other stuff. I don't even remember. I think that's all of the main things that are called Bandits Keep. But if not, Daniel, let me know and I'll, you know, remind people about whatever else might be associated with the Bandits Keep stuff. Anyway, Daniel's stuff is really interesting, but he's also a big fan of running OD&D with chainmail, which means that he needs to get with the times because there's a bunch of later editions of D&D that have come out. And as we all know, D&D is an iterative design process, which is why 4th edition is better than 3rd edition, and 5th edition is even better than that. Because it definitely improves with each iterative design process, right? That's you guys get that's the joke, is that okay? Anyway, I think you all understand. But. All right, what else to say about Daniel? I've watched a little bit of his Actual Play stuff on his Actual Play YouTube channel, and he seems like a fun GM to play with. Seems like he's really interested in letting the players, you know, really engage with the fiction and do cool stuff and, you know, throw themselves into challenging encounters and all of that sort of stuff. Willing to make rules on the fly, but also willing to, or rulings on the fly, but also, you know, willing to discuss them if it seems like that's not necessarily the kind of best way to do it, all of that sort of stuff. Anyway, seems like he'd be pretty fun to play with. And also his YouTube stuff is very well thought out. Like, he does a really good job of going through kind of not necessarily kind of pure tutorials, although sometimes there are pure tutorials, but sort of talking about like what to consider when working on something, right? So like, what does it mean to build like a dungeon? What are all the different things you should consider, both kind of the dungeon sort of within the world and the dungeon as like a space for a game to happen and all that sort of stuff. And has a number of other, he's got some really cool discussion about various kind of magic styles in games and like how to kind of tinker with Vancian magic or even just like strip it out and replace it with something else to create something that kind of reflects the feel of the game and the world that you want to play and all of that sort of stuff. And I think that's really, really cool. Totally worth checking out all of that content if you are interested in that sort of stuff. But let's go to the judges and see what they have to say. Judges, what do you think? Well, this is another difficult one because, of course, I've never actually played in one of Daniel's games. But I think we can be, you know, generous enough and give him another A. But remember that even though I didn't say at the beginning, A plus is actually the best rating. So keep at it, Daniel. You'll get there eventually. I've had a hex cast on me by none other than our newest game master to rate, Evil Jeff. We know that he's an evil person because he has the name Evil Jeff, and who would name themselves Evil Jeff without being evil? So that must be why I started coughing when I started this recording bit. I guess. I don't know, but I assume so. Maybe Evil Jeff, like from his home, wherever it is that he lives, you know, just had a sense to cast a hex into the air and send it to me while I was recording. That would be really funny. Anyway. Evil Jeff is another game master that we're going to rate, and I haven't played in any of his games, although I have gotten a chance to play with him in some games. He was in some of the Cypher System sessions that Che Webster ran some time ago, and that was a lot of fun. And then a couple of other, was there like Alternity or something like that? I don't remember the name of the game that we played that was sort of sci-fi-ish. But I think he was in that one too, if I remember correctly. Anyway, Evil Jeff is, despite the name, a pretty good dude. Although he has the name, you know, he has evil in his name, which is very confusing, I realize. But anyway, he also has a real eye for detail, which is why he spent so many episodes going through different game books and talking about all of the weird issues in them, especially the, what was it, the BX Remastered one. I don't remember which. The one that's not OSE that apparently is not nearly as good. Anyway, the point being that Evil Jeff seems like a cool guy, but also he has evil in his name. And, you know, he, whatchamacallit, what was it that I was going to say? I'm trying to remember. Oh, I recommended him Icons and he didn't buy it, which is terrible because my, you know, basically the way I'm going to get my soul back from the devil is by forcing people to buy indie games that they don't necessarily need, but will, you know, trap them in a cycle of just buying more and more PDFs, right? Anyway, let's go to the judges table to see what we think about Evil Jeff as a game master. Well, this is another interesting one because, you know, not having played in a game that Evil Jeff has run, it's basically just based on hearsay and bullshit. So, what do we think about Evil Jeff's game? Apparently, he plays with, you know, the family sometimes and, you know, anyone who is willing to introduce their family to the hobby of RPGs and especially who gets their kids hooked on expensive rule books so that they can't afford to buy drugs. That's pretty cool in my book. So we're going to give Evil Jeff another A. So yeah, nice job, Evil Jeff. Just remember that even though I didn't say at the beginning, there is definitely an A-plus rating out there that you can shoot for to improve. All right, next up, we've got another OSR Anchorite, or not really that, well, kind of OSR, because he's been doing some stuff with OSC, BJ Boyd of the Arcane Alienists podcast, I said Alienists, it's only one of him, BJ Boyd of the Arcane Alienist podcast. He runs a whole bunch of different things, including he's going to be running an OSE game every week on Saturdays that's starting this Saturday, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. I've got an elf who is like a full-on like basic elf who has like wizard spells and fighter abilities, but I've also got a thief who is I can't, what, Johnny the Sneaky or something like that is what I called him. And the idea is that he's this sort of ridiculous character who just always gets into ridiculous situations and things. Anyway, BJ seems like a pretty cool dude, even though I haven't played in any of his games. He has done some solo play stuff with OSE and has pointed out that the game goes way faster if you don't dilly-dally about what your action is going to be on your turn. Otherwise, yeah, BJ seems like a really cool guy. I haven't gotten a chance to play in anything that he's run yet, but I've definitely enjoyed having him as a player, in other games that I've been a player in. Cause I feel like he's, fun to play with, really, team player and all that sort of stuff. And he had some really interesting, we had some really interesting discussions, especially on Cerebrivore, that will be coming out at some point, talking about a number of the sort of things that he, because of his kind of professional background and education background, is really familiar with in a more kind of clinical way than I think most of us are. And that was really interesting to talk to him about. And actually, that's sort of the beginning of like my relationship with BJ, is when he called in to talk about the idea of like kind of GM fiat and rule zero and the way that different people have kind of a fundamentally different tolerance for kind of like control and expectation and stuff. I don't remember exactly what his terms were, but he was sort of talking about this idea that, basically it's a sort of fundamental element of personality that some people kind of need more kind of clear expectations and some people don't. And that was probably part of what I was identifying, was the way that those kind of unclear expectations didn't work for me just because of my personality, which I think is totally true. That's just, and I sort of know that about myself, but I had never really kind of explicitly looked at that concept, I guess, despite kind of having that sort of in the back of my mind a little bit. It's one of those things, right, that, you talk to someone and they say something that you realize is like, oh, that's like what's been going on the whole time in some ways, even if I didn't kind of like directly acknowledge it. So anyway, BJ seems like a really cool dude. And yeah, we're going to go to the judges to see what they have to say. All right, we've run a whole bunch of like expectations and just, random ideas through the simulation to decide what BJ's rating should be, because, since I haven't played in any games with him, it's just sort of like, what do I think he's going to be like as a games master? And I think he's going to deserve an A. Nice job, BJ. You tied with everybody without even running a single game. All right, two more GMs on the docket to be, rated. Who's going to take home the coveted prize of the King of Pelham's Wasteland? Next up, we have Colin Spike Pit Green, who runs the Spike Pit podcast, which is a really great podcast. I know it's a really popular one with a lot of people. Colin is super fun to listen to. I think he really kind of has a number of interesting things to say. He's also got just like a great accent, right? It's super fun to listen to him, which is, I know, one of those weird things that like I feel a little bit weird kind of, fetishizing the way somebody talks. But what can I say? I think Colin's got a really fun to listen to accent. So whatever. I'm not going to apologize for that, even though I already did. He does some really cool. He's a big fan of 5th edition in a way that it seems like a lot of the people in the sort of circle are not as much, which I think is interesting, because I think he, in my opinion, has kind of engaged with it meaningfully in a way that a number of people have not as much, which is to say that I think that there are certain criticisms that get brought up against that game in particular that have more to do with the popularity of the game and the way that the game is perceived to be than the way that like the rules suggest the game actually should be, which is kind of an interesting thing, right? The idea of like criticizing your idea of something versus criticizing the thing itself in some ways, which is not to say that it's not like meaningful criticism to criticize the idea of the thing, but it's not meaningful criticism for the thing in itself, if that makes sense, right? Like you can totally criticize like actual play 5e shows for the way that they, you know, sometimes don't really engage with much of the game's rules, but you can also like say, well, that's not necessarily like the game's fault, if that makes sense. I don't know. Anyway, point being, Colin is a really nice guy, really good friend. He's also, much like Evil Jeff, has talked about his kind of home group includes at least one of his children at this point. I think if I remember correctly, Colin has three children, and the two oldest are not as much interested in RPGs anymore, but the youngest still is, really likes playing a wizard or a magic user of some sort, if I remember correctly. And I think that's really cool to have that kind of experience and engagement with the family. That's something really meaningful. And especially, you know, since becoming an adult, I've realized kind of the memories that I have of like doing things with my dad that didn't necessarily at the time feel, I mean, they were fun, but looking back, they feel, you know, really, really special, the way that that kind of, you know, close connection is built on kind of spending time together. Like the way that we, my dad and I played this kind of weird platforming video game called Monkey Brains that I have basically, I have no idea what happened to it. But it was like it was a weird thing, because I think like a demo came on the disc of a game that I already owned, and then you could buy a license online and basically like connect the license to the game and unlock the rest of the game that was like already on the disc or something. But it was a platformer, but there was multiplayer, and so you had both players playing split screen on one keyboard, which was a very weird, very kind of early 2000s thing, right? Like split screen was definitely still a thing then. And also they didn't think of like, oh, you could just, you know, like have a LAN connection between the computers to play separately. Or I don't know, maybe that was an option for that game. But anyway, we would play that game and you basically play as these like mind controlled monkeys and do kind of platforming stuff. And it was really a really fun thing that I have really fond memories of, spending time with my dad doing that, even though we weren't very good at it. But it was just one of those things that like that kind of, you know, connection as an adult looking back is really meaningful and wonderful in a lot of ways. And so I really feel like it's, you know, very encouraging to hear Colin talk about, you know, getting to play RPGs with the family and have that kind of, you know, that sort of time spent together and engagement and all that. Cause I think that's something that, even if the, you know, I think one of the things that happens in general, of course, is that the children go through a phase of perhaps not valuing that as much. Certainly I did, you know, go through puberty and become a teenager and be like, no, I don't want to hang out with my parents anymore. And then kind of get through all of that and get to like full adulthood and be like, oh, you know, my parents were actually like surprisingly cool and nice people and, you know, did a good job in difficult circumstances. And I really appreciate that and all of that sort of stuff. Anyway, the point of all that being that I, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I like about Spike Pit, but one of the things that I think is really wonderful is the way that he talks about, the way that Colin talks about kind of, you know, playing games with, especially his youngest, who apparently has like a, like a whole kind of like spell book that he made at one point with like a binder with printouts of the rules for all the different spells, which I think is kind of fascinating and awesome. This idea of like a spell book that exists in the game and in the real world. And that's super, super cool and wonderfully creative and all of that. And also Colin has been just a really wonderful friend of mine for a long time now, really, you know, somebody that I know that I can kind of count on if I, you know, need somebody to talk to or something like that. And yeah, just in general, a really good guy. So I'm going to override the judges and give Colin an A+. Wait a second. I'm getting a call from the judges table right now. They're saying that that's not allowed for some reason. So let's go to the judges table and see what they give Colin. All right, judges, what do you think about Colin Green, aka Spike Pit, and his GMing rating? Well, despite your attempt to give him an A+, we're going to give him an A, because despite the fact that we keep saying A+ is the highest rating a person could get, an A is actually as high as the system will allow us to put in. So even if we wanted to give him an A+, we couldn't, apparently, because the computers won't let us. Well, I guess that'll have to do. Colin, go on and join the ranks of all the other fine GMs we've had here with the highest rating that we apparently can give out. And, you know, enjoy playing games in the future. Hope to see a new episode of Spike Pit soon. All right, and we're on to our last contestant, Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Jason Connerly has run a couple of games that I've been in, and I've had lots of fun in those games. But simultaneously, Jason ran a game that was Barbarians of Lemuria, but in a sort of pseudo-Greek setting, and he got terribly flustered by the pronunciation of ancient Greek names. Jason, you don't, it doesn't really matter, but you know, you let yourself get off your game, man. Come on. Also, Jason spends way too much money on Kickstarter. Maybe he should support a Kickstarter for a book about financial discipline. And that one, I will recognize, is the pot calling the kettle black. Because, yeah, I know what that one, yeah. Anyway, aside from that, Jason is a lot of fun to play with, even though his character in the Dungeon Crawl Classics game, Idris Khan, is a dick and regularly accidentally hits me with spells because I will, you know, charge in as Ardath and then he'll roll really well and what was supposed to be like a single target spell turns into a cone spell and things like that, which is not a big deal because I've got so many goddamn hit points, but it is funny that Idris Khan and Ardath have this kind of, you know, tempestuous relationship that includes Idris Khan regularly smacking Ardath with spells and Ardath regularly threatening to smack Idris Khan with his greatsword. It's a lot of fun. In my opinion, it's the best sort of inter-party tension, which is to say that it's all in good fun on both of our parts, but it, you know, allows for a little bit of ribbon back and forth in a sort of fun way. Anyway, aside from that, Jason also gives his podcast as a platform to all sorts of weird people. Sometimes he even lets one dude call in for like 20 minutes about Julius Caesar. And really, like, come on, why would you need to talk for that long about Julius Caesar and like the late Roman Republic and all of that sort of stuff? Surely it could be summarized much faster if that particular caller just planned out what he wanted to say. So we're gonna dock some points from Jason for giving a platform to that particular nerd. Nobody cares about real history. Let's go to the judges table. Judges, what do we think about Jason Connerly as a GM? Well, this one was particularly difficult because You know, Jason has been a lot of fun to play in, but also I made a character for a Cyberpunk 2020 game and didn't even get to play in that game because of schedule changes. And I feel like even though it wasn't Jason's fault, Jason is gonna suffer for it. So that is to say that, you know, after careful consideration, Jason Connerly as a GM gets an A. But this time the A+ error has been fixed. So it's definitely available and means that you didn't score the highest result, Jason. Keep at it and you might eventually get there. All right. All right. That's going to bring us to the end of the GM ratings show. What were the conclusions from this show? Unfortunately, we had a 10-way tie for best GM. How are we going to solve that? Presumably with some sort of like a cage match or a fight to the death, or maybe we'll just like throw in some undead and, you know, hit the guys with level drain and see who, you know, turns into a zombie and who has enough levels to survive. Maybe, I don't know. That seems like sort of an idea. I do kind of think a cage match might be the way to go. Just, you know, 10 GMs enter, one GM leaves or something like that. I'm not even sure how that would necessarily work, but I don't know. Maybe call in if you've got any ideas for how to solve this particular conundrum, how to, you know, figure out how to differentiate between all 10 GMs who apparently all got the same rating, despite my attempt at GM fiat as the host of the show to break the tie. I don't even know how this happened. Clearly the computer and the judges are like in cahoots or something. Because like, what is even the point of having a rating show where everybody gets the same rating and like, you don't differentiate between anybody if everybody gets the same rating? What? Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode, call in and tell me why. Also, if you're one of the GMs that was rated today, feel free to call in with your favorite piece of poetry and also why you think your rating should be changed. Your rating will definitely be changed based on your choice of poetry and not on any of the things you say about your ability as a GM. And then if you are a GM who was not rated today, but would like to go through the extensive rating and accreditation process that Live from Pelham's Wasteland followed to produce this episode, feel free to call in and submit yourself for the next GM's rating episode. And that way we can, you know, have more people that all somehow seem to get A's on the rating system, I guess, because surely that's the computer's fault and not, you know, inherent to the joke. Anyway, the voice that I keep doing is really hurting my throat at this point because I didn't plan ahead and basically recorded this all in one sitting instead of like, you know, planning ahead the way that I should have, because like, if I had realized that this voice was going to hurt my throat, I would have, you know, done more planning so that I could spread out the recording time more, but I didn't. So anyway, anyway, I hope you have enjoyed this episode of Live from Pelham's Wasteland. I hope everyone is staying safe, staying healthy, and having a great time playing or running games. And, you know, maybe even working on their GM skills so that they can get the coveted A+ rating. Otherwise, I have been Arlen Walker. I've been Live from Pelham's Wasteland, and I will see you next time for some GM rating. And hope nobody takes this one the wrong way. It's all in. I don't think it was a particularly subtle joke, but you guys can tell what's going on here, right? Like, yeah. Anyway, see you next time.